Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
And they, fans here at Riverfront, they call it the jungle. Going to make it tough on Kelly in the offense. Crumry is really the heart of that defense. Jim Scow and Jason Buck flank Crumry. Leon White, Carl Zander, Joe Kelly, and the veteran Reggie Williams are the backers. Lewis Billups, Eric Thomas, those two corners, they may be most improved defensively there in 1988. Fulcher, a tough safety, on his way to the Pro Bowl. And Solomon Wilcox is the free safety. Lots of time. He dumps it off to Harmon. And Ronnie Harmon. Pulled down by Wilcox from one side, and Ricky Dixon in on the play as well.
Oh, Sam caught him. It's a Gatorade war on the sideline.
The Cincinnati Bengals were the last team to lose in the regular season. They won their first six. They're the last AFC team to lose in the total season. AFC champions. En route to Miami. Super Bowl 21-10 over Buffalo.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Solomon Wilcott, 6 years in the NFL, Bengals, Vikings, and Steelers. You heard Dick Enberg on the call. He now works for the NFL Network and Pro Football Focus. Has a long story out on Pro Football Focus evaluating every new quarterback in the NFL and their fit with their team. The Bears have one of those. We'll talk to him about that and more as he's kind enough to join us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Solomon Wilcott's on the score. Solomon, thanks so much for the time. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on.
You bet. Always love talking to you, Solomon, and listening to the highlights of that championship game victory over the Bills. I could picture you in the oversized shoulder pads playing DB in that era. And it always warms my heart. Back when DBs would tackle instead of just try to push guys down. So good to have you all with us today, man. And yes, as Danny mentioned, we got a quarterback derby here in Chicago. Mitch Trubisky has company in Nick Foles. Let's begin sizing that up. Mitch runs better. Everything else probably falls in the favor of Nick Foles, especially big game experience. How do you see that shaking out once football starts?
Yeah, I mean, but hey, let's face it. What if Mr. Trubisky surprises all of us and shows the kind of growth and maturity that everyone had been expecting to see? And been waiting for. So now I'm not ready to close the door on the competition, but Nick Foles should make it easy on Bears fans, right? He should be able to blow this thing open in the beginning before training camp is even over and solidify himself as a starter, considering the experience that he has, Super Bowl winning quarterback. He should be able to separate himself pretty early. So, Nick Foles has to play better than he did 1 year ago, and so does Mitchell Trubisky.
When you study Mitch Trubisky, what is he missing?
Not a good decision maker, okay? And a very high percentage of negative throws, what we call uncatchable, inaccurate throws. He's got talent around him. He's got good receivers. Allen Robinson is a phenomenal player. We know this. So you got to be able to make better plays around him and be able to get the ball to him. And I'd like to see the quarterback play with a higher level of efficiency and getting the ball to the talent that surrounds him.
Do you find it unfair to evaluate a quarterback between the years by watching him on tape when it comes to his level of confidence and or leadership, Solomon?
No, I think you can evaluate him. I mean, think about it. You have open receivers. He's missing open receivers. I think there are a lot of times where you can evaluate a quarterback. And I think when Mitchell Trubisky is missing open receivers, making bad decisions, throwing into double coverage, those are things that you can, I think, even the most novice, the fan, can pick up on immediately and have a better understanding. Okay, we've seen better. We see the opposing quarterback on the other team playing better. Why isn't our guy able to play well in those situations?
When you look at the Bears overall, do you consider them competitors if they get what level of play out of the quarterback spot? How good does whoever wins the job need to be?
Yeah, I think we do. There's no doubt. I mean, the defense has been phenomenal at times. Over the last 2 years, I think they've been great. The offensive line is good. I'd love to see them use the running backs because I love David Montgomery. Tyreek Cohen, I think he's – if used in the right way in certain plays, could be highly productive. We obviously know that they needed to improve at the tight end position, but I think there's a host of players on the Chicago Bears team. When I look at that roster, I see a talented roster. I see a team that can compete inside of a division that's highly competitive after winning it a couple of years ago. So, no, there's no doubt they're just waiting for a quarterback to show up and play with great consistency and to inspire, I think, a higher level of confidence in that position would go a long way to helping the team.
You say a good division, the NFC North. Shocking to the world it was when the Packers drafted for the future at the quarterback position after being so vulnerable defensively in the title game against the 49ers, just getting pasted, and then they lose Blake Martinez. Do you see Green Bay stepping backwards this year, or do you still like the Packers?
No, to me, I thought their defense came a long way last year. Remember, they had one of the best pass rush units. The coverage units were good. They were going toe-to-toe, you know, and you talk about a playoff game, remember they beat Seattle. So, you know, they did win in the postseason. It's not like they threw up a goose egg, right? At the end of the day, they lacked offensive firepower. Outside of Devontae Adams, they had nothing going around the quarterback. And they've never really been a prolific running team. You know, it's all built for Aaron Rodgers to get the ball out and for the receivers and running backs, even in the passing game, to be able to impact the game. And so when they couldn't do anything offensively, they don't have enough firepower to create big plays, particularly at the wide receiver position outside of Devontae Adams. And they didn't get a whole lot out of Jimmy Graham last year. So for them not to address those areas in the draft, many of us are still scratching our heads on that one.
Solomon Wilcox from Pro Football Focus and the NFL Network is our guest. Which rookie quarterback do you expect to have the biggest impact this season?
You know, Joe Burrow, I expect to have the biggest impact. Now, that may not come in wins and losses, but if it inspires a fan base in Cincinnati and gives them some believability in what they're doing, if he can weather the storm and, say, start all 16 games and finish the season healthy, the guy was incredible in college. And I know we've seen other quarterbacks have good college season, but none had the kind of year he had. He plays in a pro-style system. He's not playing one of these tricked-out college offenses where a guy's holding up an emoji card on the sideline, telling them what to do. And this is a real – that's Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator at LSU, he came from the NFL, and now he's back in the NFL and taught Joe Burrow how to be a good quarterback, how to read blitz coverage, and how to set protections, and all of the things, all the nuanced things you need a pro quarterback to do. Joe Burrow had to demonstrate it when he played against a top-10 defense 7 times during his senior season. So I think he can make a huge impact. I don't know if that'll show it or reveal itself in wins and losses, but I think it goes a long way into helping the Bengals to be better, even when they had Andy Dalton.
Solomon, do these versions today of Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski make the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a serious football team this year?
You can bet. You can bet. Hey, listen, they were a serious team last year, particularly second half of the season, with Jameis Winston, and he threw 30 interceptions, had 40 turnover-worthy plays. I mean, anyone without even – you don't even need a calculator to understand that Brady makes them better than they were with Jameis Winston. And now he inspires a great deal of confidence. There are players who are probably going to leave in free agency. As soon as Tom Brady signed up, they said, wait a minute, I'm not going anywhere. They're like, I'm not going anywhere. We got a chance to win. You know, there are guys who could have left in free agency trying to stay. Rob Gronkowski decides to come out of retirement. He makes O.J. Howard and Cameron Brink, the other two tight ends, were very good, by the way, very good. And this defense, they were one of the best defensive units in terms of pass rush coverage for the second half of the season last year in the final eight games. So I think they'll continue to improve. It doesn't make them a slam dunk to win a Super Bowl, but they're certainly part of the conversation.
You know, I was confused, honestly, at the fit in a Bruce Arians offense. Tom Brady is a snap, throw, get the ball out quick, three-step drop guy. Bruce Arians likes Ben Roethlisberger, Jameis Winston, hang out in the pocket, throw deep to Mike Evans, you know, chucking it all over the field, 550, 650 pass attempts a season. Which is going to change? Are we going to see Brady play like quarterbacks in a Bruce Arians system, or is Bruce Arians going to change his system for Tom Brady?
Well, let me ask you. Remember, it wasn't just that long ago. It was just 2 years ago that Brady won a Super Bowl, right? Do you remember what play won him the Super Bowl? Do you remember that play?
The throw down to Gronk you're talking about?
Yeah. Was it not a deep throw?
It was.
There you go. I mean, here's the deal. So Gronk doesn't come back. Everybody looks at the team and say, well, Brady can't throw deep. We look at the numbers, see his average depth of target, not that deep. Typically, quarterbacks do, not necessarily what they're in terms of physicality. It's about the kind of players I have around me. That's what's going to allow me to do what I have to do. Drew Brees had one of the lowest average depths of target of any starting quarterback last year. We don't think of him as a dink and dunk guy. But that's what the system is asking him to do. Bruce Arians' offense is the one, and Tom Moore, that's the one Peyton Manning played in his whole career. Okay, they even took that system to Denver and, of course, installed it there for him, and he won another Super Bowl. Tom Brady can still throw it deep. You'll find that he still has arm strength. The guy takes care of his body better than anybody I know at that age. This is about really having a team around you and the players, the talent around you, to allow you to be the best that you can be. Last year, he didn't have that in New England. That's clear. I think he has that now. He'll be able to get the ball down the field just like he got it to Gronk to win a Super Bowl.
I want to skip along to another topic here just for a couple of seconds if we can. We have not had a ton to celebrate in America. It's been kind of the opposite of that for a little while. But yesterday, the NFL announces the onside kick shall live. Solomon, and my partner rolls his eyes at me every time I tell a high school football story, but Uncle Rico's here for everybody today. And as an underclassman, I knew if I was going to get on the field, I was going to have to be a special teams player. And I don't remember much about high school football that was more fun than practicing and executing onside kicks both sides. I thought it was a great decision by the league yesterday. And I hope it's something that never goes away from the game. It's one of the most exciting plays on special teams units.
Well, I do know that we don't need any more newfangled, tricked out way of changing our game. I think our game is good enough. I don't know that we should be, you know, when a team drives 80 yards down the field on us, score a two-point conversion, why should they get to keep the ball for yet another fourth down play? Why should my defense have to stay out there when they're already exhausted, right? Why should they have to stay out there for another fourth down play? No one's been able to explain that to me. But after a team score, they're not supposed to be given another possession or another crack at scoring again until we've had the ball. Until I at least give my team a chance to rest. That's called complementary football. That's offense, defense, and special teams all working together. This fourth down trickery deal was a way of circumventing all of that. We want to give Tom Brady his offense the ball yet again to put even more points on the board after they just went down the field on us before. I mean, think about when they came back to beat Atlanta in that Super Bowl. You kind of feel like they did it fair and square, right? Other than Atlanta helping them. But now we're going to create rules to make that a higher level of probability. So I'm not a big fan because I think it circumvents our ability to have all three phases of the game working for us, offense, defense, and special teams.
I say more offense, you old-timers. Solomon Wilcots just said, oh, what are you, touchdown, two-point conversion. Two-point conversion was just added to the NFL in 1994. Got to change things. Got to add with the times. Got to adjust. More offense. Points on the board. TV ratings. Keep us millennials interested.
By the way, defenses can score too, right? You know we can score on special teams too, right? But see, when we're talking, that's not an old-time thought. That's a person who truly understands the game. Dick LeBeau, he would coach us, say, we play defense like we're on offense. And you could see it. That's what Rod Woodson did. That's what Ed Reed did. That's what Troy Polamalu did. That's what Deion Sanders did. That's what Ronnie Lott did. So I'm just, if you see the game through all the prisms, you don't have to be one-sided about it. You can really factor in that anybody on the field can score at any given time.
All right, well, let's talk safeties then. Let's talk your position. You mentioned just some of the all-time greats right there. Eddie Jackson, they made him the highest-paid safety in football right here in Chicago. What is his ceiling?
Hey, man, I think he's got a very high ceiling. He's got tremendous ball skills. He knows he's a guy, when you find the ball as often as Eddie Jackson does, that means he's playing with very high level of what we call football IQ, understanding formations, understanding tendencies of the opposing offense, and understanding what we call combination routes. Being able to play those routes and be able to steal the passing lane, that's what I'm talking about. Defensive players who play like they're on offense, they tend to find the ball more often, and they'll get themselves into the end zone. I think you saw Khalil Mack show up in completely changed the team from the very first game he ever played with Chicago Bears. And so, you know, defense is not just about stopping them from scoring. Real talented players like Eddie Jackson says, defense is like, put the ball away and let's stick it in the end zone. And so I just wish that all the people who want to put their fingerprints on our game, I just hope they remember that as they try to tweak our game after 100 great years of good football. They're still wanting to tweak the game so they can have their name etched in some little corner of a book saying, look what I did. I changed this great game. It's all about ego.
Solomon, where's your level of optimism that this thing's going to come off? It seems like football, you know, so far down the road, all the focus right now, everyone's got baseball, labor negotiations on their mind and all the strife with that. Where's your level of optimism we're going to have a somewhat close to a normal season?
I'm optimistic that that's going to happen. I really am. I feel, you know, the NFL, you guys know, 32 NFL owners, man, they want to go to work. They want their business model to work as best as they can, and they want to get out and play. Players want to get out and play. Hey, this is a pandemic. We need to keep in mind that in a lot of ways we could want what we want as business owners, as players, as announcers, whatever it is we do, this pandemic is going to have its say now. And there's a second way. So we got to be smart. We got to be prudent. But I'm all for going back to work and living our lives and not living in fear, but being smart and prudent about what we do. But I'm not going to sit in a closet or stay locked up in the house because I'm afraid of what could possibly happen. I think there comes a time when we got to get back on that horse and we got to live our lives. We do it smartly. We're going to be safe, but you can't live in fear.
Solomon Wilcots, Pro Football Focus. We appreciate it very much, man. Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Solomon.
All right, guys. Keep up the good work. Thank you now.
Thank you. Have a great day. Take care.
I just want my name etched in some book, Mac, like some corner of a book, changing his great game after 100 years.
That's where our game, I'd say our because I love it so much.
You had the two-point conversion year absolutely correct, Parkins. 1994 it was when the NFL said, enough of this PAT crap, trotting guys out. Nobody watches anybody after the touchdown. Everybody goes and gets a sandwich or goes to the bathroom. Do you know who the first player was to tally a two-point conversion at the NFL level?
I don't. Do not.
Any guesses? I'll give you his team. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 1994. You're eight. What's your first memory of the...
Yeah, like, oh, God. Like, Alvin Harper after he left the Cowboys.
Nice call. Looks like Alvin Harper was a big waste of money, and damn, he looks so funny when he wears those big orange shoes, according to a song parody we did that included him. The Shep's probably chiming in while he's looking at the text here exchange he hasn't punched in yet. Shep, can you give him the answer, please?
My guess is Eric Rett.
It's not Eric Rett. I thought you knew this one. It's Tom Tupa. The former Ohio State Buckeye. Now you remember, right? Aren't you glad we did this, Danny?
Cleveland Brown, though. I'm just looking it up right now. It says running in a faked one-point attempt for the Cleveland Browns in a game against the Bengals.
He was a Brown. Oh, man.
I would have gotten it, of course, if you would have said Brown instead of Buck.
What a horrible clue. That's, I feel so bad.
Typically, clues are supposed to lead you to the correct answer.
I mean, it's fine. I probably wouldn't have gotten it anyway. But
I know you would have. We were just chopping it up about two-point conversions not too long ago. I know you would have gotten it with a proper clue. Good
that's
Lord.
Exactly right.
I'll take the hit. You're right. That
Danny
was terrible.
Mentions Tom Tupa once a week on this show, it feels like.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, you know, you can hate the idea of the 4th and 15 instead of the onside kick. That's totally fine. Like, reasonable minds disagree and all of that. I don't love that logic, though, of, like, we can't change the game. We want to keep tweaking with the game. We made the extra point from 20 yards to 33 yards just a couple of years ago. We've added instant replay. We've added two-point conversion. We've changed headhunting over the middle and, like, how much contact you can make with receivers and when and protecting the quarterbacks and different formations and all sorts of things have changed in the game of football as it continues to evolve. So I just don't love that argument of, stop trying to change the game. It's perfect. No, we can always make this stuff better.
I agree. Change can make things better. That's why we have it. In this particular case, I don't favor it. And I do think teams which have succeeded at a much lower rate getting the onside kick when it means a chance to win a game versus 4th and 15 can maybe do this. This is novel. Get better at it. Some of it is chance because the oblong hoochie takes some very peculiar hops, but that's on the kicker as well. Not always going to go his way if he happens to catch it just a tick high and it comes up a little bit faster than he wanted him to based on the style with which your onside's kicking. But I think it's a hell of a fun play. And as Uncle Rico mentioned, always love doing it over on 41st Street at Ken Seipelt Field and got to be pretty damn good at it.
You and your high school stories. Hey, Solomon Wilcots, I know you were, we just played this cut from the AFC Championship game, but let me tell you about junior year.
I had the letter, so I had to snap. And to snap, you have to practice it.
It's so good. It's so good. Hey, you know, we all probably do it on some level, right? At some point, I'll tell you my story on winning the 6th grade World Series with a great bunt. It was the bunt heard around the North Shore, Dan McNeil. Let me tell you.
I'd like to hear it. Hey, you know, all we can have are our experiences. And when they're good ones, we sometimes feel the want to share. Hopefully, we keep making more memories along the way. The sad ones are those who haven't and sit at the end of a bar and all they can offer is the remember when.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Batting 11th, playing short center field. Now batting, Danny Parkins.
Dan Jr.
It was really, really uplifting stuff. I was such a natural talent when it came to Little League Baseball.
Short center field. Why am I going to die of not surprised?
No, of course not. I was second base, right field, short center field, you know, wherever they could stick you where the ball was least likely to go.
Just don't step over those cones out there, kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If they could have put me out of bounds, they would have. It's McNeil and Parkins.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
On the score.
But we have to get our sports back. I'm tired of watching baseball games that are 14 years old.
We might be kind of soon, I guess. This segment brought to you by DuckDuckGo Privacy. Tired of being tracked online? DuckDuckGo can help. They help millions of people like you take control of their personal information online. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers all for free. DuckDuckGo Privacy Simplified. Bob Nightingale says that there was no economic proposals exchanged between the Players Union and Major League Baseball. The last proposal was the sliding scale submitted by the owners on Tuesday that the union called, quote, very disappointing. There was an expectation, Mac, that the players would have had a counterproposal with finances from their perspective by the end of the week. Bob Nightingale reporting that is not going to happen.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where the labor, the rank and file, are so put off by what they saw, they need more time to regroup than they ever would have expected to. This happens in negotiations. It's like, where do we start? It's difficult to respond in their minds from something they believe to be so patently absurd. So what you do is you circle the wagons as a union. And everybody exchanges thoughts, and they try to, once there's some sort of consensus, when you get closer to that as to what the best counter proposal would be, that's when you move forward. I wasn't surprised by that at all. Knowing how against the proposal the players have been up front this week regarding it. I mean, I don't know why anybody would have expected otherwise today. This is going to take a while.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's gonna take a while. I just... Tick, 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 tick. Like, you know, this is going to – what's happening here is we keep pushing this stuff back, and it's done under the guise of safety. And I don't mean that with a negative – like, as a pejorative. Maybe take it that way if you will. But, like, just they want to be safe, but they want to make money, and they want to have sports, but they don't want to impact sports next year. And it's just – at some point, we're going to run out of time. And – all of these sports are going to be going up against each other, and we'll see if they end up starting and stopping. Like the news today that the NBA, the majority of general managers prefer restarting just straight to the playoffs, which is what I've said since the beginning. There's no reason to bring the Bulls back out there for 14 games or whatever there is. Like, complete nonsense.
Right.
You know, like some people, I don't know if you saw the story, they got on Damian Lillard for saying, you know, that he's like, I don't have interest if we don't have a real chance of getting into the playoffs. Like, I don't, we've been away for so long and guys have been hurt. Like, if you're going to allow us to have a play in for the playoffs or something like that, like, great, I'm all in, let's go. But why go through the motions of getting back up to speed and all of that for games that just don't matter in the midst of this pandemic when there is risk in breaking social distancing and travel and all of that? And people are like, ah, oh, you spoiled entitled athlete. And he's like, well, wait, no, I'm not saying you got to pay me for it. I'm just saying, like, these games will not matter. They really feel trivial right now. Like, fans can't attend. If we can't make the playoffs and the fans can't attend and it's risking us for our health, like, I'll see you guys next year. To me, that's a totally reasonable stance for an NBA player to take.
It seems pointless to do it any other way for the teams that aren't playoff teams. July 31st, even jumping immediately into the playoffs is, you know, I don't have a lot of optimism about that working out because you and I both think there will be a stoppage after startage. And so it's kind of, you're already sitting there. Let's call it August 1st, all right? You're already sitting there in August, and then you're going to have an interruption to your playoffs that already is several months behind schedule with an NBA season that might start in late October. Oh, man, you are really, really pushing the calendar. And at some point, I would have to think these leagues have to seriously look, especially the NBA and NHL, because they're running out of time more than anybody. They just have to say, you know what, we gotta take it, and we gotta show up next year and start preparing for that as soon as possible, because this is a fruitless exercise. There's no meaning in it. There's no point to it if it's not going to be finished. So why even start it?
Yeah, I think that what they're trying to do is two things, right? They want to crown a champion, and they want playoff money.
Yep, television money. Yep,
playoff TV money. So whenever we have these conversations, that's what it comes back to. Like, they are going to quit on a season as late as possible because money and history. I mean, LeBron James had a chance to be the one seed. LeBron has a chance to be regarded as the greatest basketball player of all time. He's not getting any younger. Like, putting LeBron James into a postseason right now when he's among the favorites, like, that's good for the NBA. Full stop. Like, for basketball fans, for the league, for the health of the league, it's a good thing to see LeBron James try to play for a championship. So I have no problem with them trying to do it. It's just, man, July 31st is not soon.
Like, I get the same.
You know what I mean? Like, that's 9 weeks away.
It's not soon. Breaking news. Yeah, I know.
Like, and by the way, the NBA playoffs take a long time.
Yes, they do. Even if you go to a 5-game series and cut out all of the 7-game series until you get to the last one, it still is going to spill into next season.
Exactly. Even if you take out best of 7 and make it best of 5, and even if you take out travel and put it all on a neutral court, it still is 2 months.
What are we talking about here? What are we doing? Come on, man.
It's going to be really hard to thread this needle. And whenever we do this, people are like, ah, you're fear mongering. Man, no, I'm counting. Like, I have a calendar. I have a calendar. It's going to be really.
Then 112, 129, 101, 126, 148, 116, 152, 117, 103.
That's all it is. It's just counting. Like, baseball's current public stance is we want to be playing 4th of July weekend. Okay. You want to have a month long spring training part 2. You got to get guys in who left the country. Some borders are closed. You've got to get them back to their training facilities. Mm-hmm. You've got to figure out where you're playing these games. You got to work out a CBA. This is I don't know, man.
Yeah. Well, if
I don't
need,
know.
If they need the month, then they have 6 days to get this, 7 days to get this deal done. If they need a full month and plan on starting on the 4th of July. And I don't know if that's doable. I don't know if they would be willing to bend and not take the full month before they started. It just be a little
or
bit
push
more,
back 4th of July.
Yeah, people, yeah, but day. Yeah, but again, it's the pushback. But if you know, have your starters work 4 innings instead of 6. Okay? Half of them only go 4 anyway. Especially 35-year-old pink-faced left-handers. So why even mess? Just get them in. If July 4th means that much to you, then a 21 or a 25 day camp, you have to live with it. All right. You're not the only ones who've been inconvenienced here. A lot of people have been inconvenienced. If you know, just figure it out. I don't know why it has to be. I understand to some degree, Tom Thayer's frustration with that whole 1 month thing. But again, it's uncharted water for everybody in every sport, in most businesses. People have never had to endure something like this, so none of this is easy to figure out. I mean, it's a very difficult navigational journey we're all on.
Yeah, and I, when I look at baseball, and I'll ask the same question I did yesterday, the players not responding to the owners here with the proposal by week's end, I want to believe that both sides want there to be a baseball season. Like, I want to believe it, right? Of course, we would love there to be baseball. We want them to think that that's the right thing and put money aside and all of that. But, man, show a little bit of urgency here. Like, show a sense of urgency. Show some unity. Stop leaking things to Jeff Passan and Evan Drelling and Bob Nightingale. And, like, let's get in a room and get the damn finances worked out so then we can begin answering the 100,000 questions we have about the logistics of safely orchestrating a baseball season in the midst of a pandemic. I don't get a tremendous amount of sense of urgency, frankly, from either side to get a deal done right now.
Well, maybe behind the scenes there is. Yeah, a lot of what you see is posturing and people not giving everything, and that's why some of the big players have chosen to stay quiet during this time. You know, I continue to hope for something out of King Theo sometime very soon, just because I would love to get his perspective for my own knowledge, just the selfish part of me, because I think he's got a pretty good handle on this, and I'd love to know what he's thought about all this, about getting his team back together and ultimately, and how they're going to approach it.
Yeah, it would be great. I'm not holding my breath on that one, but it would absolutely be fantastic, hopefully sooner rather than later. Whenever they do spring training too, I'm confident that he'll speak, but again, that would mean that they've actually solved some huge problems here that they don't look anywhere near solving. Paul Charchian will tell us what's going on in Minneapolis coming up at 4 o'clock. Dennis DeYoung of Styx at 5. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation.
The McNeil and Parkins Show brings you This Day in Blackhawks Playoff History.
The best faceoff man for Chicago against Carter. Tapped back by Versteeg, given across by Pronger. Laced back in again by Thiemann. Around it comes near Key. Tipped it on further. Battle at the half boards. A cluster of players going after it there. Still they battle down to the last eight. Still a half boards battle. Do you believe this? Back to Pronger. Drive! And it's tipped aside by Niemi. And the horn's out. They sing their song whenever the Blackhawks score or when they succeed by winning the game. The Blackhawks usually salute the crowd before they go off. 6-5, and somebody will joke as they walk out of United Center, we had them all the way.
That was This Day in Blackhawks Playoff History on the McNeil and Parkins Show on 670 The Score.
It was 10 years ago tonight, game one of the 2010 Stanley Cup Final at the United Center. It was a gorgeous Saturday afternoon, and the Hawks getting to their first final since the 92 season and ultimately winning their first cup in 49 years. Game one goes to the Hawks at the UC, a 6-5 finish. Doc Emrick had the description. Troy Brower with a pair of goals. That's when it's starting to feel like, yeah, it's been a long time since the Hawks won that first one, because I haven't thought about the name Troy Brower, number 22 in your program, number one in your heart, Parkins, in quite some time. I know you probably haven't either.
No, it's been a minute or two since I've thought about Troy Brower, but that's what I'm talking about, Mac. That's a good round number anniversary, the 10th anniversary of the first game of the first Stanley Cup for the Hawks. That's when the dynasty begins to build.
10.
Nice round numbers that are arbitrary. But yeah, it's listen, this day in Hawks history, if we're going to do this for all of them, there's going to be many, but you know, trying to limit it to just the biggest games and the round numbers is a little bit of an easier way to vet it through. But I'm just saying, like, you know, you said, like, this is the 6th anniversary of game 3 of the second round of the second cup. It's like okay,
blank canvas. That's my two-word response. Blank canvas.
No question. I'm just saying, like, that's why you're in charge of the almanac. Like, my brain just doesn't work that way to remember dates like that. But 10th anniversary of the first cup, I can do that one.
Yeah, Thomas Kopetsky had the game winner in game one. And one of the things I remember about that one is, my goodness, how nervous the United Center was before puck drop, as everybody was, you know, milling around the arena and watching the Hawks warm up without their helmets. And it just, everybody just standing around fidgeting nervously, because all season long, the feeling had just been building to, you know, that crescendo that this is our time. This is going to be our chance, better than we've had in a long time. And I also recall that was one of the first times I lit the lamp with my oldest son before we made the stroll across Madison Street and checked in at the United Center. Yeah, majority age. He's 20 years old. He's a sophomore in college. Let's enjoy
smoke weed every day.
Yeah, Father.
The Hawks.
Yeah, it's not bad parenting. You know, for me, it was always a weird thing, because in high school, like, some of my friends were on the hockey team, and we would go to the games, and I always loved going to hockey games. I remember going to the old Chicago Stadium with Big Game Tom and the Eddie Belfour chants, and like I loved it in person, but was a Bulls guy and a basketball guy over a hockey guy. And then I graduate college in May of 2009, come back to Chicago, unemployed, playing poker, interviewing for that job that ultimately went to Shep at the Score, go back and leave for Syracuse in 2010. What was that? January, February, like maybe March or so, April of 2010. And so I am gone then for all of the Hawks, you know, cups. I'm watching it from Syracuse. I'm watching it from Kansas City. I'm not living here for 2010, 2013, 2015. Mm-hmm. And it was probably the single thing that changed about the city, like, the most noticeably.
Yeah.
In the six and a half, seven years that I lived away from here professionally before I was able to come back here in January of 17. And I would obviously come back for Thanksgiving, Christmas, holidays, whatever the case may be. And you'd come back, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're going out to the bar to watch, you know, the Western Conference Finals for the Hawks. Or like you'd see girls in Lincoln Park in Blackhawks jerseys, and you're like, what the hell is happening around here? And it was just a total change and explosion in that period of time. And I felt like I missed it. Like, I watched all of the games. I cared about it from afar. But then when I would come back and you'd see Blackhawks billboards all over the place and Blackhawks garb, it was like brand new, never been washed, still with the tag on.
Yes, man. Tags everywhere. Everybody's got a tag on their fresh crossing tomahawks or the Indian head on their chest, no question. And that's something that some old timers would, you know, get all grumpy about me. I've said, man, I've waited a long time to see it tip in this direction. So I was happy to soak it up and enjoy it. Yeah, you must have thought you either did a time travel travel when when you walked around the city to see all that red, or you landed in Cincinnati, because that certainly wasn't something you grew up with when the Bulls were kings. Even though the Hawks had good teams in the 90s, it was a complete flip of what you'd been used to. And in some ways, maybe that was good for you to be somewhere else because it isn't your favorite thing.
Yeah, so, but I mean, I remember I got into it. I cared. I had some gear. I watched the games. I went out of my way to be sure. I was always watching certainly the Stanley Cup, but the conference finals, but not even necessarily earlier on. But I just remember thinking, like, God, it's so cool.
It's so cool to get on a bandwagon. There's nothing wrong with it. It's sports.
Exactly.
You know? It's Loyola 2 years ago in March. It's okay to do that sort of thing. People don't have to be so, oh, you weren't among us way back when.
But it's weird. I feel in terms of like sports thing, like big Chicago sports things in my lifetime, I always felt like I had an ability to grasp on and connect to it in a somewhat direct way. And with that, I always was a degree or two of separation removed. Like, I didn't go to a Hawks playoff game. I didn't attend one of them in person. That's crazy. Three cup runs and all the opportunities. I watched them, but I never attended them. Yeah. And it was a complete transformation for this city and their relationship with the Hawks.
I attended five of the six in 2010, and the one I didn't attend, I watched with Bobby Hull. He was doing an appearance about 2 miles from my house. So that's not a bad consolation prize if you can't be at the rink for all of them. Well, yeah, watch with a Hall of Famer. We're going to find out what's going on in Minneapolis in just a few minutes. Paul Charchian, who usually joins us from the Twin Cities to talk fantasy football, will give us 10 minutes of his day to describe what it's like to be there right now, several days after the murder of George Floyd. So look forward to that perspective. No, we will not ignore the story. We will address it a second time in just a few minutes. Sunday will mark the anniversary of the birthday of the most powerful force on the drum kit in rock and roll history, John Bonham, born May 31, 1948. Bonzo passed away in 1980. He drank himself to death. It's your last weekend, Zep heads, to enjoy free Led Zeppelin radio on Channel 27. If you have Sirius XM, they're laying out all the good deep tracks, too. Songs like Achilles' Last Stand, Trampled Underfoot, Custard Pie, Robert Chief, In the Light, Hot Dog, Luke, myself. Happy birthday to Bonzo with his anthem, Moby Dick, on Sports Radio 670, The Score, on a Feel Good Friday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.